This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM, this is Soul to Soul. On your radio, Erev Shabbos Kedesh, Parshas Kisisa, Parshas Para, Tov Shin Pei Vav, and a very, very warm welcome to all of our radio family. Thank you so much for taking time out on a very busy Erev Shabbos, just before Shabbos comes in, to be part of our radio family, to listen and hopefully to be inspired by what we're going to say, to make it a more involved Shabbos, to have perhaps a little bit more insight into the weekly Parsha as it is, and to generally to learn Torah as part of a group is an amazing and important thing. As always, our program is brought to you as a Refuah Shleima for many Cholim. We'll mention just a few names: Hillel Eliezer ben Pesa Freida, Aaron Yena ben Avram, David Shmuel ben Dvera, and Shimon Halevi ben Chava, and Melech ben Ita, and Yeta bas Alexandria, Dvera bas Sora, Zlata Bas Masha, and Chanasara Bas Avram Avinu B'Soich Shor Chole Yisrael, amongst many others who need Yeshua. So many people who are in difficult situations now here and there, it's Yisrael all over the world. Taka, they shall all be Zoiche to Refu Shleimus and Yeshua's and Nachamas Bekarev Mamish. Yeshua ben Nunar, Torah says in this week's Pasha, V'mishar say, Moshe Abenu's servant, Yeshua ben Nun, now lad, lo yomish mitoch el, would never depart from within the tent. Yeshua gave everything up in order to be in the tent of Torah. As a result, he earned a position as Moshe Rabbeinu's primary student and eventual successor. Now, many believe that leadership is simply a matter of being in the right place at the right time. In Torah, however, leadership goes far, far deeper. Torah leaders are those who have proven themselves worthy of such responsibility, a position that can only be earned through dedication to and toil in Torah. Right, it's cultivated, of course, in the Beis HaMedrash through sort of long hours of study, of presence, of commitment, not by sort of worldly acumen or ambition. Yeshua never left the Beis HaMedrash, for as much as he longed to be with his Rebbe, he understood that true growth and mastery requires the steadfast kind of discipline of being present in Torah study. The Torah indicates that Yeshua had two qualities. Number one, he was Mishar Sari. He was Moshe Rabbeinu's servant, and Lo Yomish Mitoch Ohel. He would not depart from the tent, unless, of course, Moshe Rabbeinu needed him. Chazal, the Gemara Menachos, teaches that when Hashem saw how important words of Torah were to Yeshua, such that he never left the tent, he declared, Yeshua, the Torah is so chaviv, so beloved to you, therefore, this Sefer Torah will never leave your mouth. So Rav Shmuel Levi Vosna was known for his unprecedented brilliance in Torah and in Halacha. Unquestionably, he had a superior mind, but then so many people with sort of exceptional capabilities never even scratched the surface of Torah greatness. It all began with Rav Vosna's acceptance or rejection into Harav Meir Shapiro's premier yeshiva, Chachmei Lublin. To gain entrance into the yeshiva, all prospective students were expected to be proficient in 400 pages of Gemara by heart. Young Rav Ozner just didn't have that background, and as a result, the mashgiach of the yeshiva actually denied him entrance. Despite being rejected, Rav Ozner refused to give up, since he still had a few hours before his return train to Vienna. He chose to occupy himself with Torah study rather than just go home disappointed. Rav Meir Shapira chanced upon this young bocher studying in the Beis Medrash. The Rosh Yeshiva asked when his interview was. He explained that it had already occurred and he had been turned down. The Rosh Yeshiva was so impressed with his persistence, learning Torah instead of just feeling sorry for himself, he decided to accept him on the spot. If this is your attitude, I want you as my student. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Ki Sisa, Tov Shin Pei Vav, Parshas Pora, Tov Shin Pei Vav. We are going to talk a little bit about the main issue of the parsha that occupies the entire immense second aliyah of the parsha, which is, of course, the Egel Azav, the golden calf that was, in so many ways, the greatest undoing of the Jewish nation, and actually caused them to lose that level that they had at Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, where we went back to the beginning of time, to the time before even the sin of Adam and Rishon. The Pasuk says that they pressured Aaron into making the Egel, and he took a professional implement, and they, the Erev Rav, made this golden calf. And they said, Eila Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God, Israel, who took you up from the land of Egypt. Now, the fact that they said, this is your God, Yisrael, so on that, the Chachamim already asked, the Kuzari asked this question, the Ramban, the Rashbam, and others, what could possibly have caused these great, great people who were the ones that merited to go out of Egypt, that about them, they were called, they were titled, the Dor Dea generation with more insight, more knowledge, more intimacy with our God than any other generation, what could cause that they would end up making this golden calf made out of the very gold they just took off their own ears of their own earrings? And furthermore, to even say about this, this is your God. So the Orach Chaim, he adds even an additional question. He says that even according to what Chazal say in the Medrash in Tanchuma, that it was done through witchcraft or through some using some name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Micha, who was kind of a bit of a renegade Jew, threw into the fire, and on which it said the words Ale Shor, let this ox rise up, as Rashi in fact says. But still, and the eagle actually opened its mouth and spoke, and it said, Anoichi Hashem Lakecha, I am Hashem, your God. So it's possible to understand that because of that, they would have some sort of a reason to think, to imagine at least something about that
that issue and maybe somehow give this more credence than it deserved. But certainly, it's impossible to understand how could they have reached a level where they would say about this, this is the God, Ashehelucham Eretz Mitzrayim, who took you up from the land of Egypt. In other words, how would it be possible? And how is it irrelevant that they saw with their own eyes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them out of Egypt, you know, with Moshe Rabbeinu as his shaliach? How could they compare an ox that, as King David says, an ox that eats grass? How could they even imagine that that would take the place? That would be their God. So, Achazal, the earlier authorities, answer this, and the commentaries of the Torah say, and the they all sort of revolve around the same point, even though obviously the details are different. The mistake they made regarding the sin of the Egel did not actually emanate, God forbid, from a recognition that that this was the God who took them out of Mitzrayim. And no one denied that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who took them out of Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu was his loyal servant. But they made the mistake and they thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had sort of invested in Moshe the power to also be godly. And therefore, he gave Moshe the possibility to do all sorts of signs and miracles in Egypt, as in fact it says in Parshas Vayera, Vayem Hashem Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Re'ein Saticha Elekim Lefaro. I've made you a lord over Paro. And in fact, the Yonasan Ben Uziel translates over there, Asisicha ki ilu Eloya shel Paro. I made as if you're the God over Paro. So therefore, now, after the Satan came and sort of confused them and actually showed them the bier of Moshe Rabbeinu as if to say he was no longer alive, so the Jewish nation searched to fill that lack that they had, and to find something that onto which HaKadosh Baruch Hu would pour down the power that he could become this sort of a God in place of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, it's give this ox the same powers that he gave Moshe. And that power would be able to sort of be their support, be at their side, to let them continue their journey in the desert and to bring them into the land of Israel. And why did they specifically choose a golden calf to act as that? Because at the time when at Har Sinai, by the giving of the Torah, where God, the Chazal said that God opened up the seven levels of heaven, and Klai Yisrael were able to look at, and they saw the holy chariot of Hashem. And we know one of the four images that are connected to God's holy chariot is the ox, together with a human being and a lion and an eagle. So they tried to somehow interpret for themselves this vision as if there's some sort of, in the ox, some sort of special level of holiness. And they wanted to sort of somehow invest in that ox, this godly koyach that they understood or they thought that Moshe Rabbeinu had, in order to sort of lead them in place of Moshe. And therefore we can understand the root of their mistake. Because at the very time, at the very moment when they saw this ox that was created from their nose rings that they threw into the fire, And now he's acting like a live ox, and he's eating grass, and even he speaks, and he says, the Aseret HaDibur, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. So they actually thought that they were completely successful in what they tried to achieve, and that Hashem was sort of with them in this action. And it was Hashem who actually gave this ox this godly power, right? Just like the image of the ox in God's holy chariot. And therefore, on this calf, which is they actually made, they thought that God was agreeing with them and wanted that this ox should serve instead of Moshe as their guide and leader. Now, some of the commentaries, the Kuzari in his first chapter, that they sort of emphasized that the people wanted that he should have some kind of physical power, that they could actually see him, and that he would sort of lead them, and they wouldn't just have to have the spiritual power of Hashem alone. And therefore, when they were sort of fooled by the Satan, and they actually thought that Moshe had died, they wanted to, as you said, to have this spiritual power take effect on something actual physical, and that physical item would be their leader. But even according to these commentaries, still they never ever considered this object to be HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. But they thought it would be some sort of a spiritual thing that Hashem had invested with power, which they thought was similar to the koyach that he had given to Moshe during Moshe's lifetime. Okay, we're going to stop here for a moment. We'll be back after the break with much, much more on this very, very difficult to understand topic. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. My name is Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Kisisa, Parshas Parah, Tov Shin Pei Vav. We are talking about the Egel, and we brought the commentaries of many, many of the opinions that what the Jews were doing when they made the Egel was to not Chas V'Shalom replace Hashem, but they thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had invested Moshe Rabbeinu in certain energies that made him godlike, and now that according to what they saw, they believed that Moshe was no longer alive, they wanted something else that would have those same powers as Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, it's not a good thing, but nevertheless, there's not actually an absolute sort of denial. This is not heretical. You're not rebelling against God himself in the sort of normal fashion. But obviously, certainly, that this whole idea is mistaken from its very, very inception. And the whole connotation of it is absolutely a kfira, right? In the Meshech Chochmah, in actually Parshas Kisisa and other places also, speaks at length to explain this. And he's what he says is actually worth learning, and he has like deep ideas, right? And things that are fundamental in our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and maybe we'll bring some of the major points and try to explain them. Now, the fundamental, we know, of our emuna, our trust, our belief, and the fundamentals of Judaism are that HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone himself created the entire world. And he created ex nihilo, what we say, yesh me'ayin, from absolutely nothing. And Only he has the power. There is no other energy, no other entity in the world. He fulfills it every single second. And there's nothing in the world besides Hashem. And he is the one and only Kol Yochel. He can do everything. And everybody relies on him, needs him, and only through him receives their ability to live. And Alayrat, Hashem himself needs absolutely nobody. And therefore, in order that the Jewish nation would be able to come close to Hashem and to merit, to have some kind of benefit from the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also in order that they should be able to earn for themselves the eternity of the world to come, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our Torah, which is the basis of the fulfillment of this whole world. And the basis of the whole way the world is run and operates. The Torah is the essence of everything. And through it, everyone must sort of conduct themselves according to it. The kedusha, the holiness of the Torah is the mashpia, is the energy that gives kedusha, that gives holiness to everything that is connected to it. There is no other source of kedusha, of holiness in the world that does not come directly from the holiness of the Torah. So it is, let's say, for example, regarding the elevated status of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, and even greater than that, the sanctity of Yerushalayim, and the sanctity of the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and the sanctity of all items that we use for mitzvahs, any mitzvahs, all these things, they have no independent kedusha, but they get their kedusha from the kedusha of the Torah, who commanded that these things should have kedusha. So too, we have to understand also the role of all sort of physical items in the world, all the things that we sort of relate to them and sort of treat them with kedusha. Let's say, for example, a sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzahs, all these kind of things also have no independent kedusha, but all their holiness comes only from the fact that they are used as objects of a mitzvah to do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, if a person thinks that any of these things have their own independent holiness, or they have some sort of great value that is not connected solely and uniquely to the fact that they are used to carry out and perform the will of Hashem, that is absolute heresy. That is kfira against the will of Hashem. And that really is that the essence of such a belief is what we call avodah zarah. Right? And this, you've made this object into something that is holy by itself. You've turned it into an idol. And its halakhic status is like any other idol that people bow down to, and therefore it has to be destroyed. The world has to be rid of something like that. And the truth is, even as relates to the kedusha of Moshe Rabbeinu and his greatness, that the Torah speaks at length about the great praises of Moshe Rabbeinu, still, that's only because of the fact that Moshe was the emissary, Moshe was the shaliach, who was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the vessel that was considered worthy to transfer the Torah to the Jewish nation. But Moshe himself, again, has no independent holiness besides the kedusha of the Torah that he has learned. And if such a thing could be conceived, that Moshe Rabbeinu would do a sin, so then it's absolutely clear that he would be no greater, he would have nothing in him that makes him independently greater than any other human being. Therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from heavens and he saw the angel that the Jewish nation had made, sponsored by the heir of Rabbah, the mixed multitudes, he understood the very root of their sin in such a way that they were somehow giving a godly kedusha to a physical thing, to a person. And he understood that they're making such a, and he was saying that they had made the same exact mistake that they were making with this ox they had made with him. And they related to him some kind of godly powers, right? Which, of course, he never had. And he never could have. And there's not a possibility in the world that he ever could have had such koyach. Therefore, at that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu lifted up the luchot, lifted up the tablets, and the of stone that were in his hand, and he threw them onto the ground. Because even these luchos, which were, they were gods, they were maids. The Torah tells us they were the ma'aseh yedelikin. They were fashioned by Hashem, or even if we're talking about the physicality of the world that Hashem created. And Moshe understood that if this Torah, if these luchos would get into the hands of those who sinned with the eagle, so they would turn those luchos into avodah zarah also. And they would also think that they had some kind of independent ability. Where the reality is, of course, that any kedusha that was in them, again, is only because they expressed and they brought down from the upper worlds the instructions of how we can do, we can fulfill, we can carry out the will of Hashem. And that is it, nothing more. And therefore, Hashem agreed with Moshe Rabbeinu. He thanked him. I said, Yasher koyach, that you broke the luchos in Shabbos. Why? Because that breaking came actually to strengthen within the Jewish nation the fundamental emunah, the fundamental belief of Ein Oid Milvado. There's nothing else in the world besides God Himself. And this is the same thing we find elsewhere with Chizkiyahu HaMelech. And also what he did, the Chachamim also agreed with him. When he saw that the Jewish nation was giving incredible, incredible credence to a copper snake. And again, they related to it as something that had independent powers, independent kedusha, as if it has some kind of godly strength. So he took that copper snake and he ground it into dust and he burnt it in front of the entire Jewish nation in order that they should all see and they should all realize that the entire koyach of a copper snake was nothing more than just, you know, at the time when it was made, when the Jewish nation was in the desert, and they were being attacked by these terrible snakes, and they were being poisoned by them because of the sins that they did. And Moshe made that with, obviously, at the behest of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to serve as something they could look at, something they could focus at, and kind of use that as a means of completely negating their hearts to Avim Shabashamayim, to their Father in heaven. But in it itself, there was absolutely no independent energy at all, and then absolutely no distinction, no importance at all. And when the Jewish nation started to relate to it, that it had some kind of personal abilities and strength, that was literally considered to be like Avodah Zarah, like idol worship, which has to be destroyed from the world. As in fact, the Chachmei Yisrael, all the wise people, agreed with Chizkiah that was the right thing to do. So we can sort of summarize from everything we've said until now that our whole relationship with Kedusha, with holiness in this world, as any kind of an independent entity that sort of was bestowed upon any kind of physical object, whatever it might be, right? Such a thing is considered without a doubt kfira in the Ratzon Hashem. We are committing an act of absolute heresy against God. And similarly, like it's literally like bowing down to some kind of idol. Because as we said, there's no other holiness, no other Kedusha in this world that doesn't attain its holiness from the Kedusha of the Torah. And the whole purpose of that Kedusha is only for one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to aid us, to help us, to support us, to do the will of Hashem. And when we sort of really, really internalize that lesson, and it gets into our heads and gets into our hearts, right? And we understand that what we do can be a tremendous opportunity to reveal and show the world about the covered Shemayim, about the honor of Hashem, right? Then it has Kedusha. And on the contrary, when the things lose their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to God's will, so then it becomes obligatory to actually destroy them from the world like any other idol. And from here we see that, as you said, even the holiness, and we're so sensitive to this now, even the Kedusha, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael itself, again, is not something independent that's connected to a particular nation because of what we are. The entire Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael stems from the fact, and only from the fact, that it's the land, as the Torah says, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doreish Oso. It's the land that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's backyard. It's the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is interested in it. Tamid Eini Hashem Lekecha Bo. The eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are always looking at it. Meireishis HaShana, from the beginning of the year, Ve'ad Achrishana, till the end of the year. Right? It's the land that our others, our forefathers, desired more than anything else, and it was given to the Jewish nation in order that they should be able to fulfill the will of God, the mitzvahs that apply to the land of Israel. As the Ramban says in the Parshas Acharemus, it says that Hashem and Nichbadi, the honorable Hashem, who Elokei Elokim, is the God of all gods, Vadonim, and the master of all masters, L'chol Olam, for the whole world. Aval Eretz Yisrael, But Eretz Yisrael is Emtsayas HaYishuv. Yinachas Hashem Miuchedes Lishma. It's a special, special place for the furtherance, for the popularization of Hashem's name, right? And there's no one else who has any control over it besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. As it says, V'yisem li segula mikol amim. We are the most treasured of all the nations. Ki li kol aretz. Because everything belongs to me. And Yirmiyahu says, V'yisem li la'am. You'll be my people. V'anechi elakem lakim. I will be your God. Not that you should, God forbid, give any credence, any power to any other God at all. And the people who live in Hashem's land, in Hashem's backyard, have special, special laws that they have. The cities that are there, and the many mitzvahs, the increased level of mitzvah observance that you have in Eretz Yisrael, which if we're done for the right purpose, for God's purpose, that instills Kedusha. And therefore it says, Ushmartem es kol chukosai, guard all my chukos, es kol mishpatai, and all my statutes, va'asisem oisam, and do them. And then, if you do that, v'loisokiechem eschem oretz, the land of Israel will not then spit you out. Right? And it says, Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land, and yet lachem, l'reshus, I'm going to give you to inherit, right? And that's what you're going to get. And yet lachem, I'm going to give it to you, and yeshem lakechem, asher dalti eskem naam. I'm Hashem, your God, who separated you uniquely from all the other nations. In other words, we can say, now, what does it mean? Hashem separated us from all the other nations. That Hashem controls the world by appointing certain angels who look after the needs and the responsibilities of the goyim. But we have the privilege that we are looked at and we interact directly with God ourselves. And if we look at it any other way, then we're making a big mistake, and that can be avodah zarah too. So we see that when a Jew sits in Eretz Yisrael and conducts himself the way the Torah wants him, and his desires are to fulfill all the mitzvahs that are connected to the land, like separating tithes and maizes and the laws of the Shemitah year, etc., etc. And he does it with great love and great joy and dedication. And he doesn't look for ways out that he doesn't have to do the mitzvahs. So then such a person testifies, right, that his living in the land of Israel and his love of the land is emanates from the fact, and only from the fact, from the recognition that the Kedusha, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, stems from the Torah, and that is the way only to fulfill and to sort of spread the desire of the world to fulfill the will of Hashem. Okay, we're going to stop here. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul, and we'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Parshas Kisisa Tov Shin Pei Vov, as we close in on another amazing and beautiful Shabbos, Shabbos Kisisa, Shabbos Parah, the week after an amazing, amazing Purim that I hope you all enjoyed, that you all gained from, that you were inspired by, because there is no more inspirational day of the year than Purim. As we always do at this point on the program, just to fill you in on some of the important times you need to know for this coming Shabbos, starting with, of course, the earliest candle lighting time today, which is at 5:15 p.m., that's barely an hour from now, can already get your Shabbos candles up and ready and get stuck into this Shabbos. It's such a beautiful Shabbos. The Shabbos after Purim, Purim, of course, created such a level of Kedusha. Shabbos is then just a beautiful continuation of that. So let's strive to get Shabbos in our homes a little bit early. If you can do it at the earliest time, 5:15, great. If not, any time after that is good. The latest time for benching licht this afternoon is exactly an hour after that at 6:15. 6:15 is the latest time. There's no, therefore, no normal time, no summertime. 6:15 is the absolute deadline for everybody for lighting candles. Yes, the shkia then is at 6:33, which of course means that yes, there are those 18 minutes, but they are not for us to use as regular time to do malacha. We have to consider 6:15 as our absolute deadline for doing malacha, and it's only for emergencies, people that actually need that time to avoid, God forbid, breaking Shabbos. They're allowed to use those 18 minutes, but we don't have access to that. 6:15 is when Shabbos starts. You say 6:33 is a sunset, and therefore 6:51, you can already daven Ma'ariv and say the Kriya Shema, and it's proper night, and then go home and or be at home and sit and enjoy your beautiful, beautiful Shabbos meal together with family and friends, and make it something nice to speak about some Divrei Torah. This week's Parsha, there's absolutely so much to speak about. The Golden Calf, and Shabbos, and the building of the Mishkan, and Moshe Rabbeinu's request to be close to Hashem. So much to discuss, starting, of course, with the half shekel. And there's definitely a material there, and you can speak about the week, and you can sing some beautiful zmiras. There's so much to do at a Shabbos meal. Should never be boring. Tomorrow, of course, is Parshas Kisisa, which is a very, quite a long Parsha, especially the first two Aliyot, the second Aliyah. People are always amazed at how long it goes on for, and of course, that's because it discusses the whole incident of the Golden Calf, and we want to read that for a Levi, because the tribe of the Levium were not involved at all in the Golden Calf. In fact, they were the ones that Moshe Rabbeinu set up as his vigilante to take revenge against those who had been actually involved. Then, of course, tomorrow is a special Maftir. It's the third of the four special Parshiot that we read during the month of Adar. The Parshat Parah, about the making of the Parah Aduma, which would be used to purify people who had become defiled by contact with a dead person during the days when such things were important. That, of course, with Pesach coming and every single Jew having to go to the Beit HaMikdash and bring his Korban Pesach, it was important to brief us again on those laws, and therefore we read that as the third of the four Parshas, and it comes with a special Haftarah that we read together with it. The Shabbos carries on. Shabbos is getting progressively shorter. At the moment, almost a minute a day, sunset is moving. And therefore, Shabbos Kodesh tomorrow night ends at 7:04. 4 minutes past seven is the termination, the end of Shabbos. And we go into another action-packed week as we sort of turn our attention to the upcoming Chag of Pesach. We are learning about the malach of kosev, of writing, moichek, erasing, and surveya, sort of dying. And let's talk for a moment about sort of incidental writing and erasing. Says, let's say one may not sort of cut through letters that are written on a cake, let's say, in frosting, or on sweets, or the like. Similarly, if a cake is sort of decorated with a meaningful picture, like a tree or a house, one may not cut through the picture, even though one's intention in cutting the cake is simply to eat it. since the letters or pictures have meaning and it is very, very clear that they are being erased when the cake is cut, it is rabbinically prohibited to do that. Right? Says the Mordechai, and the Ramo brings it in Simon Shin Mem 340. However, one may cut between the letters, even though this sort of separates a words into a sort of component parts, one does not violate moichek, one does not violate erasing, as long as each letter remains whole. Therefore, if a cake that one plans to serve on Shabbos is being decorated, it should be done in such a way that one will be able to cut between the letters and pictures. Afterwards, the slices of cake may be eaten, even though eating them will destroy the letters. Since one is actually engaged in the process of eating, it is not at that point considered moichek at all if he erases a letter in the course of eating. Now, when letters or pictures appear sort of on cookies or biscuits as a result of having been sort of stamped into the cookie dough, right, as with sort of what's called tennis biscuits or things like that, so then there is absolutely no prohibition against cutting or breaking them, since these letters have no significance. Erasing them sort of indirectly and incidentally is not actually prohibited. That's the Mishnah Berurah in Siman 340 in his note 14. Now, there is an opinion, some actually want to maintain, that it is rabbinically prohibited to read a book that has sort of letters stamped or written on the edges of the pages, such as you see often with library books. Because when one opens the book, the letters break apart. And when it is closed, then they're sort of reconstructed. In practice, if no other book is available, one may read such a book, because many maintain that bringing the different parts of a letter together is not considered kosev, nor is separating them sort of considered moichek. And additionally, since a book is meant to be opened and closed repeatedly, this is not considered even sort of short-term kosev or short-term moichek, erasing, and thus involves absolutely no prohibition at all. We always grew up actually taking a bookmark before Shabbos and putting it in the book at wherever you're up to, which then already slightly separates the pages, and therefore afterwards you're free to then continue opening it, because it's no longer all together as one. Now, some actually rule that if opening a package of food will definitely tear letters or pictures, it may not be opened on Shabbos. They allow opening the package only if it is possible that the letters or pictures will not be torn in the process. Others argue and maintain that one may open such a package, since all parts of the letters actually remain, but have simply been separated from each other. It's not actually moichek, you're not erasing anything. And certainly as a first instance, l'chadchila, it is proper to be strict, but when there is no way to open a package without tearing letters, one may be lenient. One who opens the package has no interest anyway in erasing the letters, and the action is not considered. It's not really constructive, but it's actually destructive. This is Guano Panah Chai from the program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh. Pashas Kisisa, Pashas Pora, Tov Shin Pei Vav, a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos coming right after Purim. Purim, I hope, was such an inspiring, such a beautiful time for all the Yidden, Baruch Hashem, to be able to come together as Esther intended it should be, of Leich Kinoises Kayahudim, gather all the Jews together and party together and celebrate together and feel the closeness, feel the oneness, feel the unity that needs to exist amongst the Jewish nation. What an amazing, amazing opportunity it was for all of us. And now that it's over, so we turn our attention, please God, and look forward to the upcoming holiday of Pesach, which is not very far away at all. We are talking the malach of writing and erasing on Shabbos. And we say one is allowed to wear sort of shoes whose soles are kind of stamped with letters or pictures, even though walking in those shoes may actually leave like an impression of those letters or those pictures, let's say on mud or some kind of similar kind of a surface. One who sort of wrote on himself with a pen, not such a nice thing to do, but if you did it, so Laloche is going to still allow to wash his hands and dry them in the usual way, since ink generally does not come off as a result of just washing and drying one's hands one time. However, if he actually would like the letters to come off, so he must be very, very careful to wash and dry his hands very, very gingerly and gently so that he does not assist any way in removing of those letters. One has to be careful about that. Well, that really is about all the time we have. Shabbos, as is breathing down our neck, it's quite close. We're only about 45 minutes before the earliest time to actually light our Shabbos candles. And there's work to be done and preparations to be done. So I'm going to leave you to your devices to get those last things ready, to go have a shower, go clean up the house, go put the food on the heating device so we can have a truly, truly splendid and wonderful Shabbos together. It's so great being with you. Again, as always, if there are any comments, suggestions, criticisms, or the like, please pass them on either through the station or to me directly, myself, Rabbi Moshe Schnurb. And I just have the opportunity now to thank all of you for being with us and to wish every single one of you a menucha, a Shabbos, a restful Shabbos, a Shabbos of joy, of inspiration, of achdus, of togetherness for us and for all the Yidden everywhere in the world. May we only hear good news. To each and every one of you, a beautiful Shabbat Shalom, a good Shabbos.